Does the Board of Health Department for that event?
If you ever have an opportunity to buy a herring or a mackerel and wrap it in a piece of newspaper, you know, the way they used to, you may get a piece of newspaper. You're supposed to, according to fish store convention or appetizer convention, you're supposed to wrap it in three pieces of newspaper. You see, the first one absorbs, the second one absorbs a little more, and the third one you can walk, you can put it under your arm and make it home a block and a half or so, and not having to worry about your clothing. Some stores go ahead and wrap the herring in four pieces of newspaper, and then you have the added bonus of being able to read what that piece of newspaper has. The last mackerel that I bought in the store was wrapped in last week's Jewish Press. It was the end of the Jewish Press in the classified ads. And I noticed something very strange. I remember that 25 years ago, there was only one advertisement in the morning journal, the Yiddish paper, or the Tog, or the Folwitz. There was only one advertisement for a Shatchan. He was Oiving Fields. He is a horrible greaseball who has an office on 42nd or 43rd Street, occasionally makes it onto some of the talk shows like Johnny Carson or Joe Franklin or Merv Griffin. He makes it. You're a real character, but you knew all the years that if you're not going to make it on your own and if you just have difficulties, whatever the difficulties may be in trying to get yourself a mate, you could always rely on Oiving Field. You just have to call up, and that was it. Needless to say, I grew up and I cringe at these things. There's such asinine stupidity to think that this greaseball is going to be able to dispense a service that is somewhat in keeping with the Jewish tradition and also a utilitarian as far as what he is advertising. How horrified I was, and I use the word horrified yet to be qualified, how horrified I was to pick up the Jewish Press of last week and notice that in a very dignified manner, after and some before Oiving Field, there are about 8 or 9 legitimate, active, shidduch dispensing organizations and individuals. Not the least of which is the National Council of Young Israel, who now has a computerized kind of a situation, motivated, instituted, manned by none other than Passaic's own Richard Staroshevsky. Yeah, you're in your youth department, but you never really thought that in today's computer age that you would go ahead and do it Oiving Field style. The only thing I can tell you, however, is that it is not only in the Jewish scene that we are finding this situation. If you go ahead and pick up a Village Voice, all right, you will notice that aside from the ads, there is a general, you can glean a very interesting bottom line to an attitude that has now emerged. In the 70s and the 80s, it was the bar scene, it was the single scenes. You went to parties and you went to the bars and you knew that some which way some of you would be married, men and women alike. There is a tremendous backlash as far as this scene is concerned, and they are now opting for the computerized shatchan as well as the individual shatchan, which brings us to the next major step in our trek through life, after bat mitzvah, and we took care of sweet 16 last week, you know, after bat mitzvah, we have to worry about turning over a couple of times. I don't know that there are too many halachas concerning driver's licenses, whether you should, or whether you have to buy your child a car or not. So we'll leave that be. And then the real next station in life that we'll have to worry about is our children have grown up and they are ready to get married. What are our responsibilities? Do we have input into their mate and the choice of their mate? Do we have a right to approve or disapprove? If we do disapprove, does the child have to listen to the parent? But what do you mean the child doesn't have to listen to the parent? If this is al pi halacha, child always has to listen to the parent. Well, maybe not. Maybe our rights cease at that point when a child says, I am ready to get married. Let's talk about the Shadchan historically. What are the halachas historically as they have developed concerning a Shadchan? What responsibilities does a Shadchan have, or qualifications does a Shadchan have? Let's see. Let's take it problem by problem, piece by piece. For those of you who have just had or expect to celebrate a bar or bat mitzvah, let me assure you that you will turn over four times in your sleep. You may have a flu or cold or something, and before you sneeze seven times, you will have a child ready to be married. You may not be ready, but I'm afraid that your child will very much be ready to get married. If you are still diapering them, well, then you'll have to go through a flu. You'll have to shovel the snow three times, change your snow tires two times, I don't know. Then you'll sneeze again three times and they'll be ready to be married. Any which way the time flies, if you weren't aware of it, I think you ought to speak to those who are aware of it. It is inconceivable and just totally incomprehensible that a little wawa that was bestowed upon me by the graces of God when I decided to come to Passaic is already telling me that she has a date, and you know, he's and that's it. Whether she should go out or will go out, that's a different story. I certainly trust her implicitly, and you know, at the rate, if that continues, if I can extrapolate, the guy is a sophomore, and I know he's going to be finished in 2 years, and I know exactly what he's going to do. He's going to be a wage earner. So that means within 3 years I may have to decide whether or not my little daughter is going to march down the aisle. Well, you know what 3 years means? That means a couple of classes. It means just one Pesach, two Pesachim, three Pesachim. I mean, I've got it all planned out. I know exactly what I'm going to say on those holidays, and that's about it. So it does happen. It really, really does happen. And it happens when you least expect it. So we might as well start talking about it. I'd like to talk, as I say, historically, read you something about the historical notion of the Shadchan as it appears in the Encyclopedia Judaica, which in this case has a very lovely summary. What are the... What? Huh?
Go all the way back.
Well, the original Shadchan may have been Eliezer, right? I'd like to talk about parents' role tonight. You've heard about all is fair in love and war, correct? Is it true, al pi halacha? And once you decide to hook up with another family, do you have to disclose everything that there is to know about you? What may be disclosed, what need not be disclosed? What must be disclosed? Okay? If an engagement is broken, God forbid, what are the ramifications? And are there times and instances when one is permitted to break an engagement? Or where one should. So let's start. Yeah.
When you talk engagement, are you talking engagement or you're talking tonight?
Well, obviously,
tonight.
Yeah. The fact of the matter is that if we need any English parallel to tonight, it would be engagement.
Yeah.
It definitely would be engagement. and not the Kiddushin of Hareach Mekudeshes.
No.
But definitely tonight. Let's take a look at the Shadchan. Obviously, as you just said, Bambi, the first Shadchan was Eliezer, as we learn in Bereishis, when Avram sends a Shaliach, and he sends a representative to go find a wife for his son. The story implies that the servant, Eliezer, had the authority to use his discretion in making the choice on behalf of the father and on behalf of the son. However, that still doesn't mean that the next generation is bound by Shidduch, because it was Yitzchak's son, Yaakov, the next generation, who chose for himself two wives, Rachel and Leah, and did not have a Shadchan, which leads us to believe that in Chumash times, which is obvious, the institution of Shadchan as a necessary institution in joining two families, in bringing the bride and groom together, was not a given, was not a must. During the times of the Gemara, marriages were arranged by the two heads of the family, whoever the heads of the family may have been. Well, that's obvious, because in any given marriage, you always had the melding, the bringing together, and the welding of two estates. And so it was only proper that the head of state on the one side and head of the estate on the other side would negotiate a marriage. The term Shadchan, says the encyclopedia, in its present meaning, first appears in rabbinic literature in the 13th century, that's the 1200s, with the famous Mordechai, who describes and discusses whether a Shadchan should receive his fee even if the marriage does not take place. In other words, you pay me for my time, though someone decided to go ahead and call off the marriage. And in Austria, the minhag was that the Shadchan wasn't paid until after the marriage had taken place. In other words, we guarantee success, otherwise we don't collect a fee. Again, normal and natural. I think if you one night have insomnia, or you work very late, you will see on some of the television channels these new advertised legal firms who will tell you that we will not take a penny unless we win for you and until we collect for you. So it's a standard operational procedure. However, to the west of Austria, in the Rhine countries, Germany, the minhag was that the Shadchan was paid as soon as the parties reached an understanding. And that was it. We'll soon see why. This is the mayor of Rottenburg. We will soon see why the difference in minhag. And in Austria, they insisted that you go ahead and pay only upon successful completion. And the other one in the Rhinelands, in other words, Rabbi Meir of Rottenburg, where you're paid as soon as the two parties, as soon as the two families reach an understanding. The Shadchan was entitled to a higher fee than that awarded a business broker because the stakes were so much higher. The Shadchan was given much more than the 1 to 1.5% that a business transaction would bring as a brokerage fee. When the contracting parties lived more than 10 miles apart, the Shadchan received 3% of whatever the dowry was for his efforts because of the geographical distance. The matchmaking profession was originally very highly esteemed, and there were very many famous rabbonim who made their livelihood from this occupation, obviously because they had so many contacts and they knew intimately so many of the families whom they hooked up. A 17th century writer cautions matchmakers, quote, that when you are arranging a marriage between two parties, never exaggerate and always tell the truth. He added that in earlier times, no one but scholars were shadchanim because of this reason. You tell it the way it is, you never exaggerate, and you must tell the truth. Rabbonim and scholars were the natural go-betweens in the Middle Ages when fathers were anxious to obtain learned and pious sons-in-law. And in time, the traditional integrity of the marriage broker began to decline. A principal reason was the fact that men with unstable backgrounds and occupations were tempted into the profession's uncertain undertakings. Peculiar persuasive and social talents required for such a profession stimulated the development of a unique type of a personality. Generally, the shatchan could be relied upon to be a perpetual chatterbox, lively, good-natured, and even impudent. Amidst the guilelessness, however, an element of maliciousness could be detected. A classic type in Jewish folklore and fiction, the shatchan is portrayed in all the gay plumage of his loquaciousness. His genius for euphemistically glossing over the physical and character defects of a client is by now legendary. I don't know how that joke goes, but there's no question about it that there isn't a Jewish comedian in the Borschtfeld who doesn't have at least 10 minutes in his and her repertoire about shatchanim and their relationship to brides and to grooms. But we're not shatchanim here, we're parents. What role do we have? Clearly the Mishnah states that just the way it is a mitzvah to go ahead and teach a child Torah, it's a mitzvah to go ahead and raise a Jewish personality, to guide a child to some kind of profession, it is also a mitzvah to get that child married off. The only thing is that the mitzvah must have the bride's consent and the groom's consent, which means and implies very early on that children must have and have the right of veto over their parents in the matter of shiduchim. Parents may suggest, parents may urge, parents may force, parents may go ahead and terrorize their children. But ultimately, unless there is consent on the part of Chosen and Kala, there is not going to be a shidduch. Is this in violation of kibud av va'em, an honor that is due to a mother and a father, because mama knows best, papa knows best? And the answer is no. You have a right to say no. Now, when you have a right to say no, you always have problems. Okay? But the alternative, what?
No, you're in trouble.
When your mother says, I'll let you decide for yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in trouble.
Yeah. Your problem is obvious. Who knows a child better than a parent? What does a child know about the projections of life that a parent hasn't learned already and knows 10 times as good? If this is the case, why should a child be able to go ahead and say no and get away with it? What happens if you have a kid who is using marriage so often to break away from parenthood or from parents, to show his independence and or her independence, and wants to elope with a lowlife? You mean to tell me a parent is not allowed to go ahead and do anything, is prohibited from protesting? So it depends. It surely depends. The only thing I caution you is that probably by the time children are ready to get married, parents are the least effective in giving their young bride or groom the direction that they are asking for. And so what do you do when you can't do anything with a child? You find yourself a lawyer, a doctor, a rabbi, a counselor, a guide. These are all euphemisms for what? For a shatchan. For an objective third party who can go ahead and see the situation, negotiate a situation, and probably accomplish 10 times more than the parent himself or herself. So not only from the point of view of the young, single, unmarried gal or guy has the institution of shatchan become critical, but from the point of view of the parent, the existence of some kind of matchmaking organization, society, service, or individual can sometimes become very, very critical. I am in possession of tests. They are a psychological battery of tests where I generally require a chassan and a kala to submit to the test if they want me to marry them. I show them exactly what their problems are going to be. You are going to be a nervous chalalia. You are going to be a grouch. Here are the times when you are going to be a nervous chalalia, and here are the times when probably you are going to be a grouch. And it's all computerized, so once there is that printout, these kids believe it. However, I have been able to use that tool in breaking up kids who don't belong married. As simple as that. Now, I don't do anything, I just let the computer do it. You answer it, kids, and I show you, you are as incompatible as a mitten is on the head of a cockroach. Simple as that. That is the, that's the anti-shatchan that we have. And thank God that we do have these situations, because never as today have kids been so prone to do Moshe Kapoya, to do just the opposite of what a parent wants. We no longer have the family hierarchy of grandparents know best, then parents know a little less than best, and then there's me, so therefore I should go to those who know best. Today, the child knows best. Child knows best, and unfortunately is educated to speak with a certain intellectual arrogance that child truly knows best. Oh no, I am not denying the fact that the chemistry between two kids can be very real, but that is more often than not a passing passion and has absolutely nothing to do with the compatibility of the couple. So here comes the new emergence of a new kind of shatchan who has two roles. The first role is the traditional one, to bring kids together, and the second role is to be a buffer, and they do it, in trying to make certain that those who are incompatible stay apart. Yeah, kids do have to be willing, and just as you know your particular art and science in life, you know how to get into the heart of the matter of whatever it is, the qualified shatchan, so to speak, should be able to get into the heart of the matter so that kids will want to be willing. You know what the fancy name for it is today? The emergence of a family therapist, you know. Mm-hmm. That's a marriage therapist, marriage counselor. Yeah. You have to be willing to go. And often, what I have found is where the kids just don't give a darn, they will accede to the wishes of the parents to go just once. Just once. Generally, that's all I need. Generally, that's all I need. I put the test down in front of them. Even without sending it out to the computer, I can make some, quick calculations, give or take certain percentages over there. I say, are you crazy? You're off the wall. And then they'll walk out with their face as low as their knees, and go home and argue and do something about it, and that's it.
Now, what about children not being prepared for marriage? Not being prepared for responsibilities that marriage entails?
It's the same issue.
I come across that a lot.
Sure, it's the same issue. You should see it on the rebound.
Every day.
You should see it on the rebound. You run to get married for whatever reason, and it doesn't take very long, and the seams and the cracks start to open, and you have it. But the sum and substance of what I'm telling you here and now is, if you think that the role of the Shadchan is dead, even for yourselves, because we sitting here are enlightened, educated, modern individuals who have no need for this ancient institution, as we saw so often in Tevye, you know. We certainly are not going to have a Malik Pekum cackling in front of us and in back of us and knocking on our door every single time, "Have I got a match for you?" You know, it's really not true. We have taken the institution and given it a new veneer, given it a new image, and boy, do we need Shadchanim today more than ever before. No question about it.
In a different role.
Oh yeah. The role has to address itself to the needs of the generation, of the milieu. Mm-hmm. These are the needs. Now I ask you clearly, my number one son is going to come to me and ask me that I should give him advice on what kind of girl would be best for him.
I agree with you.
Okay? Did I? You see, but that's not the issue. The fact of the matter is, Florence, that there are 70,000 Ben Davids out there who have asked me. You see. But so long as I can be implicated, accused, proven to be the father of my son, then I am already totally impotent to be able to have any kind of input as far as that is concerned.
There must be someone else who can ask.
Well, that's the point. That's the point. Yeah. And you may be that person. You know, you may be that very person. Surely there is someone in his life whom he will ask. You know, that is not an indictment of my son, but it comes back to tell you the original starting point of this little segment is that the parents' role today is sometimes nil. Probably you will be able to do nothing else but pay the bills, and that's it. Okay? Now, as far as what do you learn from this, you've got to learn that you may have certain input with a young gal or a young guy. You've got to be sensitive to the fact that you may represent to that young gal or young guy the only handle on some kind of objective reality in telling him or her the so-called facts of life. Hey, maybe you ought to look into this, or maybe you ought to look into that. But if you will tell that kid, he will listen. If I will tell him, won't listen. Let's see. Let's go on. Okay, good. But it becomes so devastatingly deep when it comes to these issues here. Let me dispense with something very quickly. Is all fair in love and war? The classical Shiloh was asked. Two kids get engaged. That's engagement, not Kiddusha. And a gal goes ahead and steals the heart of the engaged bridegroom-to-be. But it's a third gal. Do we recognize the fact that she has a right to do such a thing? Likewise, does he have a right if it's a groom who sweeps a gal off of her feet? There's a very interesting conversation that goes on so deeply. There are those who say, sorry, and this is a quote that goes back to a Gemara, if someone is buying something and you come along as a third party, and you snatch it up and pay more, you are the lowest scoundrel in the world. Nikra Russia. Okay? Now, you can't identify with that, so let's say last night you decided to go shopping in this holiday season, but New York City declared an emergency, it reached 32 degrees, that's the freezing mark, and you need a pair of gloves. You want them in brown, and there's only one pair your size that is being sold for $7.99. It's marked down from $13.99. And you're looking at it, and you try one pair and a second pair, and someone snatches that pair of gloves from you. And you say, hey! And by that time, he's already checked out, or she has checked out. I am sure you will feel horrified, you will feel terrified, you will feel so terribly cheated. You will feel as if you have been stolen from, you've been held up. There are no two ways about it. And there is no difference, says this one opinion, between that and stealing a gal right out from under you, or a guy right out from under you. Nikra Russia, you are an absolute scoundrel. There is a personality defect, a character flaw that has to be looked at. On the other hand, there are equally as many who say, what are you talking about? How can you compare this to gloves? Gloves you buy and finish. Here, obviously, if the consenting party decided to break the engagement, you are talking about lifelong emotions, and you are talking about a mixed-up shidduch. It was as simple as that.
Maybe it wasn't
Hashem. Well, that's what you see, I didn't want to use those words. You know, if that concept has meaning to you, okay. Yeah. But if, you know, I'd like to put it in very secular terms. If there could have been a new chemistry that has been developed between the third party and whoever was the engaged party, then obviously you know that the first chemistry was no good. The first experiment was of low level. And there is probably no way to resolve it. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein that this is a reality in every generation, and he was asked to Shaila. He says there's no real way to bridge these two opinions other than by saying they're probably both right, but at different stages of a relationship. If you go ahead and consider yourself a moral individual of Ben Torah, and you see a couple that has already entered into what we call Tenoim, which for now we will call hardcore agreement on marriage. You know what that means? We know who the photographer is.
Right.
Okay? And this is serious now. We know where we're going to get the flowers. We know the band. We have the hall. You're talking about 30,000 smackaroos in some cases, right? That's called hardcore engagement, tenoyim. Whether we signed the papers or whether we didn't sign the papers, it's irrelevant. But if you already have the hall and you've gone and you've chosen all of these things, it indicates that this relationship from both sides has already made a massive investment of money, and ipso facto, you're well along the way. For a number three guy to come in and do such a thing, then he or she, okay, cannot call herself a Yirei Shemayim, a God-fearing person. It just is not right. However, if it hasn't reached that stage yet, continues Rav Moshe Feinstein, and there is just a relationship, call it what you want, they're going steady. Now, we know that Jane and Joe are going to get married soon, but there hasn't been any of these hardcore preliminaries taken care of, then probably you have Yeshal Milismo, you have enough halachic opinion that says that you can do it either way. And you live with it every single day. There are no two ways about it. It does happen.
How's that third party feel? Do they want to continue the relationship generally? If they knew that they were, with the husband, they think the husband was in love with someone else and vice versa. Why would that party want to stay involved in a situation?
The first part.
Because we don't know. We don't know the poignancy of love, the on again, off again, the impossibility of a human being to think rationally in the face of emotions. You see, you cannot quantify in terms of mathematical equations that thing which is called human emotion. We need laws to conduct us in a very mechanized way, in anything and everything that we do, so as to prevent our actions from being overtaken by human emotions, because you never know where the human emotions are going to be. Now, if you look at it from an emotional point of view, it's legitimate. There's no two ways about it, it's legitimate. So it's on again, off again. A human being is not entitled to that. You have to be a crazy kid, a teenager, a Bobby Soxer, to be up and down, to be infatuated one day and then horrified the next day. It's not true. And then go ahead and try to reconciliate the third moment. You're dealing in the realm of emotions. And so there has to be a cutoff point, probably. And that cutoff point is either before you have hardcore arrangements or after you have hardcore arrangements. And needless to say, that is why, if for no other reason, that is why we build in to the whole situation of shidduch, we build in this safety valve. Bride, until you say yes, nothing goes. Groom, until you consent, nothing goes. So that you cannot give in to any pressures, even the pressures of your own inadequate emotions or confusing state of mind. But we'll come back to breaking engagements a little later. How much does one have to disclose to the party of the second part? Says nothing.
Nothing that happened before.
Well, you see, let me let you in on a major. But even more, fundamental, there is a concept called mekach tos. I have a right when I enter into a contractual relationship, and marriage indeed is a contractual relationship. I have a right to yell foul. You did not tell me that which was supposed to be told to me. And if that's the case, mekach tos is batel hamekach. Then our agreement, our arrangement, never took place. It just doesn't exist. Because, after all, I came for oranges and you gave me pencils. You convinced me that it was oranges that you wrapped up. That is, pencils that you wrapped up. And that it was oranges. And I opened up and I saw pencils. Therefore, I never bought this from you. I have every right to my money, and finished, and that's it.
So before, after.
All right, that's, we're talking before.
Okay.
Because after the marriage, it becomes, not true. After the marriage, there's a different dimension altogether. When you have to break up a marriage, what instrument do we need? A get. Okay? What happens if it's a mekach tos? If it is a marriage that was conceived of in deceptive ways, can I call that marriage? The answer is no, I can't call that marriage. Well, if I can't call that marriage, what can I call it? I can call it living together for a year or two or 6 months or whatever. But if it's living together, do I need a get? I need a get only to break a marriage. Did I have a marriage here? No, I had two human beings living together under one roof. That still doesn't constitute marriage. So then we have to talk about this thing when we get down to get and we get down to divorce. And that is a different story altogether. All right? But the concept of mekach tos, which is a concept of I'm going into an arrangement and these are the assumptions. If the assumptions are such that are normal and natural and agreeable, and you didn't disclose something which was abnormal, unnatural, and totally disagreeable, then let's see what happens. Let me give you some examples. This is a gleaning from dozens and dozens of Sifrei Halacha. Serious illness. Internal, external, doesn't matter, but that wasn't evident. Do we have to disclose it? Don't we have to disclose it? The answer is you have to disclose it. Allergies? Probably not. Allergies, probably. You understand?
Something that people didn't like, Tay-Sachs or something like that, where it's imaginetic. How did they know when they're going into it, unless they have tests
no. before? We are talking about something that is without question known. Without question known. As we get at when we finish this, I will ask you to enter the world of Jewish genetic diseases and what you call Tay-Sachs, amniocentesis number one, and premarital testing for Tay-Sachs. Surely that'll be a close next step that we will have to investigate. I will ask you to see a film strip, a very fine film strip on Jewish genetic diseases, and then we'll talk. We'll kick it around. I'll tell you what the halachic literature will say. But again, if there are undisclosed serious illnesses that could have changed your mind about the guy you marry, we get back into this mekach talos business, this total misrepresentation of the deal. You expected a human being, and not a baboon. You got a human being, but you didn't expect to have this tzara on your hand. Right? Then what happens if he doesn't want to give you a get? You hung up for the rest of your life? Or do you come to me and I simply tell him, buddy, you lost because she don't need a get. It was your lack of disclosure that complete... But I'm living with the woman for X numbers of years. Tough on you. Marriage has contractual bonds and there are certain issues of disclosure. You did not disclose this. Your medical records indicate that you have this condition since you were 6 years old.
What happens if he says, I did tell her she forgot something?
What happens? Then I have to do a thorough investigation of the situation. I have to decide. But it plays a problem. Let's get into some stickier problems, though. Okay? They're all under the issue called yichus. Anyone have a decent word by which we can translate yichus?
Heritage.
No. Heritage is more Russia.
Pedigree.
Okay. Now, I am sure that all of you looked that up in the dictionary before you came, right? But we somehow know what yichus is. But let me tell you what some of the problems are. Girl was raped. Does she have to disclose this to her groom-to-be? Mm-hmm. Girl was seduced. Does she have to go ahead and disclose this to her groom-to-be? You have a girl who was raised in yeshiva, Tov Shin Lamed Zion, that's 9 years ago when I was called in on this. She's firm. She's always been firm. Family's always been firm. Had this incredible sexual urge and was living with a guy. He was firm. Learned the Blat Gemara every single day. And they played their sexual fantasies to the hill. They couldn't break it up. They couldn't, once you tasted the sweet the sweet sucker of life, and just couldn't break it up. And she wrote a letter, and, she's going to go off the wall trying to find out. She wrote a letter to her Moshe Feinstein, trying to find out how she can go ahead and do tshuva. How can she restructure her life?
Why did you marry?
They weren't for each other in terms of marriage. They were just serving in each other temporary and temporal needs. You see, sure, obviously, that would have been okay. And Moshe Feinstein told her what to do. It's a very simple thing. But at the end, the question is, what do I tell my husband to be? Do I have to disclose it? And the answer is, if you hide it, you're very foolish. But these are problems that could you know, that could exist. A person is adopted or not adopted. One that existed several times throughout Jewish history. Conversions out of the faith, in other words, apostasy. This was very big at the time of 1492, the Spanish Inquisition at that time, Guerra Civil, where people in the family just capitulated and whammo, they converted rather than stand the pain. Tachlis, that's my sister. Do you have a right to say to me, you don't want to marry me? You see, and these are all areas where generally the halacha will ask for disclosure, because the opposite, the concealment, is liable to lead to that big problem called mekach to'os. If you told me, I would never have hacked you a chaynik to begin with, and I would have called it off, nipped it in the bud.
Is disclosure the same for men as women?
Yes. And the question is, you have to tell the shakun all of these things. Yeah. The answer is no. The answer is no. But once the shakun makes the deal, then you yourself have got to go and say. No! To the principals. This is between the principals. Now, if it were not to be this way, do you know where you would have another problem? Do you know where you would have assassinations and recriminations constantly? A shatran goes ahead and makes a deal between you two families and doesn't disclose factor X. You come to the shatran, you are holding a gun in your hand, and you say, I'm going to blow your brains out if you don't pay me for the shame that I have to go through. Not only that, you will refund every penny of your fee. Shachan says, what are you talking about? Why should... It was a deal to protect the Shachanim. Let the principals get together. Once the principals get together, then you will go ahead and decide what you want to do. Do you want to go through? Or you don't want to go through with it. This concept of yichus, again, may have a negative connotation in our day and age, because we're so egalitarian, we're so, you know, we want to be so equal. Well, you know why we have that feeling? Because we are not royalty and aristocracy. Do you remember the problems that we were having with what's her name over there in England? The Princess of Wales, Princess Di, and Princess Margaret before her. Lord Snow, you remember. But Princess Di also was a little commoner who wore jeans over there, and she liked to sit on the floor and listen to rock concerts. An anacle of Queen Elizabeth doesn't do that.
But she was a lady.
Huh?
She was a lady girl.
Yeah, she was a lady, but Yichus also. Was here, but the yichus was tainted by virtue of her upbringing, Okay, you see, so we're all commoners. In that sense, we are not low class, but we're egalitarian. We're open to give equality to everyone. I dare say that if you were any kind of royalty, Hasidic or Lithuanian, or German or Hungarian, it just wouldn't go. These are the traits of royalty. Now, if you like them, I'll send you to a royalty training school. But
wasn't the whole thing with Yichus there to protect everyone against things like Zeirus that wasn't done properly among Zeirus and things like that, more than the Yichus itself?
Yeah, yes and no. However, this was played to the hilt. Yeah.
Listen, if you look at the problems now.
I don't understand it, though. Isn't that the Hasidim, or is that the Hasidim? There's plenty of yeshivas also that go through all this searching. Is it that they really still perceive themselves as aristocratic?
Without question. not still, primarily.
Oh, my son, it's not just that.
Without question.
God forbid your parents should be, or you should be a Baal Tshuva. Forget that.
Well, that's one of the new, you know, that's one of the new statuses.
No good, you're dirt.
Sure. No, you're finished.
Dirt. Your parents
you're finished.
Even, your parents even. You're no good.
Well, is there something, I don't know, so often I hear, I mean, even have friends with fathers like this, you know, that really have this whole thing of, you know, you can only go out with a boy if he's an extra baby and he's conceived in purity. I just, it's so hard for me.
Not
that
you.
That all comes from
us. Us. Okay. Oh, yes, it's all there, built into the system, so to speak. But remember that the system was devised not to be so aristocratic as to create problems, but rather to have simple safeguards that probably we have on other scales also. There are those who are American middle class who wouldn't marry someone who is African tribal, you know, or Aborigine Australian, because of all kinds of crazy things. This is a type of yichus.
Yichus is, even in my family, I can remember, you know, you wouldn't marry so and so as a butcher, a trader, or whatever he was. So the yichus is defined.
The scales exist forever. What scale we are going to use to measure this so-called yichus depends on the time, depends on the station in life. a Polak marrying a Hungarian, today,
yeah,
is finished. Mm-hmm. Finished. Mm-hmm. And the Litvak and the Galician,
no.
Forget it. Mm-hmm. And you think that this was only in terms of marriage? When I never knew what this Litvak Galitianer rub was until I came to the Yeshiva Beis Medrash in YU, and at that time the Beis Medrash was packed, and all the Russia Yeshiva used to line up in the morning, right on Mizrach Vant, on the eastern wall, for davening. All the Russia Yeshiva sat on one side, so as we faced the Aron Kodesh, it was to the right of the Aron Kodesh. One Russia Yeshiva sat to the left. Now, it didn't matter whether there was room on the right or not. This Rabbi Gerstenfeld, Olav HaShalom, always sat to the left. I did not know why. And for some strange reason, I couldn't figure out why I didn't ask until 3 or 4 years into my YU career. And then I found out. All of them learned in Mir and Lithuania. He was a Galician. And they refused, and he had to sit on the other side. They refused to have him sit on the same side. This is in my day and age with Russian yeshiva. Yeah, put your eyes back in the socket. Put your eyes balls. Without question. What's this talking about?
It was on Torah Tzvi, and you had plenty of both there.
What's it talking about?
If they'd have two groups of kids, they wouldn't talk to each other.
That's
right.
Deal. The Syrians.
Absolutely.
Syrians and everyone else.
Well,
these are cultural orientations in addition to Yichus.
No.
It doesn't hit you right, huh?
It's all different.
You feel cultural orientation?
It's different. I mean, that's their problem.
Well, again, I will admit to you, because there is this, the cultural orientation and scale of values, which you don't see in some of the instances that you will mention. Mm-hmm. You're right. But nonetheless, it's a factor.
The whole thing of a Baal Tshuva is exactly that. That person has done Tshuva, and their slate is cleaner than someone who's been raised in a...
It's,
I mean, that's my... Once you've done Tshuva, what's past is gone, and you've started a new life.
A
lot of people don't feel that way. Yeah, I... Yeah.
Okay,
fine. I mean, I don't have that problem.
I have a problem.
We were at someone's house on Shabbos afternoon, and a bunch of them, there must have been 4 or 5 couples around the table, and everyone, either one or both of the couples, remember when they were kids eating treif. And then we said to ourselves, and we said, now I know why. I could just see somebody walking in, wanting to set up their kid with mine, and hear me talking about when I remember eating shrimp.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Along this line, I have a problem, and I want to share it with you because it's going to affect you. My second son is probably going to be married before my first son.
Mm-hmm.
The love of his life is a black girl. She's firm, she's Jewish, her mother wears a shaitel. How are you guys going to react to me?
I think you're right. Listen, don't say that. I don't have very good.
When they're going to be chattering behind the mikvah, what are you going to say, Marilyn?
I
know I can count on you to be a friend. What are you going to say?
I have said this. I mean, ask anybody I know. I have said I would not bother me in the least. If my son came back home with a truly black Jewish girl rather than a shiksa.
For the sake of the record.
I think I'm strong about that. I really do. I don't mind
really
that. But if this human were truly a Jewish girl, I don't care.
She is truly Jewish. I married her mother and father.
I have two very good friends who are from and black.
Bambi, whatever you do, don't bring home. I told my mother, what do you want me to do, bring home a shaggots instead? She said, forget I even said it. I said, I don't want to hear. I grew up with them. No friends. I never would have.
When I was going out and introduced them, I went out with a from black Jew, and I went out with a from Chinese boy.
From Chinese.
Good food.
I can say that now. I mean, truly. I don't know if I can say it if it really happened. If it happens, the ball is right now, I really feel that way.
It's going to be their problem.
Are you sure? And you're not going to share in that problem?
Well, yes, I will share in that problem.
You were saying, Tamar?
That when I asked my mother permission, because the shatkan said that before she would set me up with somebody who was not white, I had to ask my parents permission. And I said to my parents, I said, what would you think if I went out with a black? And my parents, who are not very understanding, said as long as that person was Jewish, that was the only thing that mattered.
And how many of us have said as long as that girl is white or that boy is white?
It goes the other way.
Yes,
you
sure.
See.
Right.
Okay.
I'm fleeing heartless also.
But you ask if it's very real. The answer is yes, it's real. No, it's real. I'm asking you, how would you feel at dancing at the wedding of Daniel? For all the typing that you've done for me, the least I could do is invite you.
Okay?
No question about it.
And what are you going to feel about? How are you going to feel when everyone is looking at me? What are the feelings going to be? And what are the theories going to be that will be floating around?
I didn't ask you to ask me the questions.
I am asking you the questions.
But I want to know.
Does it bother me?
I don't mean does it bother you the marriage. I don't mean that.
Does it bother you
what people are going to be saying? Or will
people are saying no matter what.
No, I know that.
I mean, you don't.
I am very sensitive to what anyone says about me.
Can you
see the scene at that wedding?
I would love it.
I think
it's terrific. Can I bring a video camera just for myself?
It depends who you're going to invite.
I don't believe it.
I will invite 600 families, every single family that has been on the Young Israel mailing list ever. Ever from day one.
Wait, can I ask you something? Are you going to put a picture of the engaged couple in the invitation?
In the Herald News.
Jewish
Community News.
Jewish press wouldn't.
You see, so what is going on here is just simply each on our own level, and this is good luck by way of your comment. I'm just working on your comment still. I haven't left you. We all have, each of us has a genius for entering this arena of yichus, each from our own perspective, bias and prejudice. So that you may not be able to see the cases that you have mentioned, don't bring me home X, Y, and Z, but every one of us has built into us our preferences, our prince charming, our princess dies, and so on, to the exclusion of others. So it does exist. There's no question about it.
My problem, for lack of a better word, with it is more, you know, if we can all admit to ourselves that it's coming from our